We hope you find this WILL podcast to be valuable. A $10 voluntary credit card contribution at willpledge.org will help us continue to make podcasts of our programs available. Thank you. And that address again is willpledge.org. WILLPLEDGE.ORG. Now here's your program.
This is Focus. I'm David Inge. Glad to have you with us. Harriet Williamson is the producer for the show. At the board this hour is Jason Croft. Kyle Mabry was on our number one. In this hour, we will be doing something that we've tried to do from time to time on the show. You know, we have a lot of physicians on this program. We talk about human medicine. We give people a chance to call in and talk about their health issues. And something that we also try to do on a regular basis is to give people the opportunity to ask questions about the health of their companion animals, mostly dogs and cats. We have done other kinds of things, but mostly dogs and cats. And over time, we have drawn on the University of Illinois College of Veterinary Medicine for guests. And we've always been really happy to have folks who are vets here from the U of I on the show. And we, in fact, have one here this morning. Candace Norell is our guest. She's on the faculty of the Veterinary Teaching Hospital in the College of Vet Medicine. She is a primary care veterinarian. In fact, she oversees the primary care clinical services at the Veterinary Teaching Hospital and has a lot of experience with companion animals. And she could even be your vet if you wanted to. And so we're wide open here and would be very happy to have questions. And I know she would do her very best to give you an answer. So if you got some kind of issue with your animals, it can be a particular problem you're not quite sure how to approach, or if you have questions about routine care, any and all of that is great, and we'll be very happy to take your call. Here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. That's the number. We also have a toll-free line. Go to anywhere that you can hear us, 800-222-9455. And if you'd like to send us an email, you can do that, too. It's will-talk, W-I-L-L-talk, at illinois.edu. Thank you very much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
I appreciate it. I know we were chatting before the show got going. One of the things I know that you would like to have the opportunity to talk about is for people who live with cats, it's good to remind them that they need periodic checkups, just the same way people think about doing with their dogs. Cats really should have an annual checkup, too.
Absolutely. And it's easy to think that because they're living inside that they don't need care. And the American Animal Hospital Association has done surveys regarding the care of cats. And most people say that they don't realize that cats need to see the veterinarian, or they've never been told that because they're strictly inside and they think, you know, well, why should they have to go to the vet? But they do age and need routine care at least once a year. And then after that, the time that they turn seven, we usually do recommend annual blood work if they have an ongoing illness every 6 months. So they do require routine care and early intervention.
Yeah. Particularly, I guess one of the things that I think about is are whatever vaccinations are required, rabies and other sorts of things. Rabies is, in fact, one of those things that really is required. But I'm sure, again, people think, well, my animal lives indoors. It doesn't come into contact with other cats or with any other animals. So why is it really important to stay current on rabies?
Well, besides the legal requirements for rabies vaccination, you have to be aware that if your cat were to bite a visitor, a child, even if it was a provoked bite, that cat will be required, if that child is treated by a doctor, they're required to report that, and then that cat may be required to be quarantined. And if the child or whomever was bitten requested it, they could require that the cat be euthanized for rabies testing, because there is no testing that we can do on a live animal. So in order to keep your pet safe from those risks, vaccination for cats is definitely required.
Okay. Hey, I want to introduce the second guest. We were planning on having two, and he was a little late, but I'm glad that he's here. Kenneth Welly is also here with us. He is also, as is Dr. Norell, on the faculty of the Vet Teaching Hospital in the College of Vet Medicine, and he is an exotic animal veterinarian. In fact, he's got a particular interest in birds, and I understand that you are the only vet in Illinois who is board certified in avian medicine by the American Board of Veterinary Practitioners.
That's correct.
All right. So, again, we can I started out saying I thought probably most of the questions we'd have would be dog and cat questions, and probably so. But here, we got a bird specialist, folks. So if you have bird-related questions, you can give us a call, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Okay. We've got a caller here, someone in Indiana. So let's talk with them on our toll-free line. Hello.
Hello. It's too bad. A few years ago, I would definitely talk to him about birds, but that period of pet help is over. I got cats now and some dogs. I have three cats, and so I look at all three of them, their behavior. I have one cat, a tabby, named Gracie. She would eat, I think, until she burst if I allowed her to. And I'm trying a few strategies. None of them seem to work at all. She hangs around my door, so anytime I open it, there she is making the sounds that she needs some food. So I've cut down on the amount of food quite a bit, but it's still almost 24/7 in some ways. It's really not that bad, but it is a lot more than the other two cats come around to look for food and ask for it. Or if you give me any hints, or this is common, or exactly what may be going on otherwise. Thank you.
Okay. Well, what do you think?
First of all, there certainly could be medical issues associated with an increased appetite, and it may just be the fact that she really enjoys eating. But how old is your cat, Gracie?
I knew you were going to ask that. I'm going to say 2 years. The thing was, all the cats I have had sort of a bad family background, and she was hit by a car, and a lady stopped. And not the lady hit the car, but hit the cat, but another lady, and picked it up, and she was bleeding. And I just happened to be walking by, and I was just a couple away from my lid. So I took the cat, went to the vet, had the x-rays done, and luckily there was no breakage in the sinus cavity or anything, but she was quite bruised, and there was some bleeding. He thought that she was under a year at that time, so make her between approximately 2 to 2.5 years old.
Okay. And her body condition, does she appear to be overweight? Can you easily
feel?
Yes,
I'd say if you look at her and the other two females, all three are females, they have a much slimmer backside profile. She bulges.
Okay.
And, how people go, oh, you've got a nice belly. Well, she certainly does.
Right.
Find out.
Well, some cats just really enjoy eating, and they will definitely eat until they are full and over full. So one of the things we recommend, I know it's difficult in a multi-cat household to separate them, especially if you're free feeding them. So what you might want to consider is going to meal feedings. I know that sounds difficult, but you may have to separate the cats during mealtime and actually measure out their food and consult with your veterinarian about if she's significantly overweight, they may want to try a prescription diet or a weight loss program for her to take off some of those extra pounds, because it can lead to disease processes like diabetes, increased risk with arthritis.
That's what I was fishing for.
Yep.
So that is a possibility. Okay, well, I'll take your advice and get a hold of that, and we'll go from there.
Yep, definitely want to try to keep them slim, because they are predisposed to developing some weight-related health concerns. And so, first of all, making sure that she's healthy overall and that there are no metabolic diseases. Mm-hmm. And then from there, working with your veterinarian to develop a very gradual weight loss program for her. Cats need to lose weight slowly. And so working with a veterinarian to develop a weight loss plan is crucial for her.
Okay. Well, thanks a lot.
All right. Thank you. Well, other calls are certainly welcome. 333-9455, toll free 800-222-95. And again, you can call us or send us email will-talk@illinois.edu. I think now that pet owners there, if you go to a place where they sell pet food, there is an enormous range of stuff. Not only there are a lot of different brands to choose from, but within particular brands, then they have food that they say, well, this is for this age cat, for example, if you're talking about a cat, or a cat with this sort of issues. And I'm sure the same thing applies to dogs. How do you if you have a cat or a dog, how do you sort through all that to try to figure out what's the right thing to be feeding the animal?
Well, certainly consulting with your veterinarian about the products that you're selecting, but there are some things that you can look for on the packaging. There's a statement on every pet food that says it's AAFCO approved. That's AAFCO. And that is a statement that says that that food has been evaluated and is okay for animals. It will say for cats of all ages, or it will say it is okay for cats that are pregnant and lactating, adult cats, or it will say it has been AAFCO approved for kittens. And it's important to look for that, because the actual front of the packaging is, it's all about marketing too with animals. And so it may say, you know, that this is a great kitten food, but when you read the AAFCO statement, it'll say it's approved for adult cats only. So it's important to look for that AAFCO statement on the bag, and it's usually fairly small on the side or on the back of the bag, and try to consult with a veterinarian about any foods, especially if you're going to do like a home-prepared diet for cats. Cats have very, very specific requirements, as do dogs, but cats are very sensitive to lack of, especially taurine. It's an amino acid. So it's really hard to cook a homemade diet for them. It's certainly possible. But if you're looking at the stores, you want to pay attention to that AAFCO statement. There's a lot that goes into labeling, and especially when they say that it's flavored or that it is tuna meal. I mean, all of those things are AAFCO regulated, so those mean that there's a certain percentage of tuna, or it has tuna flavor added to it, but the first ingredient may be corn. And so it's really important to pay attention to the AAFCO statements, look at the ingredients, and then consult a veterinarian if you have any questions.
There are some animals that can reliably and safely and healthily free feed. I mean, you can leave the food out,
yep,
and they'll come and they'll graze and they'll have a little snack and that'll be fine and they'll go off. And then, of course, then we know there are other animals that they would just chow it in one gulp, whatever you put there, and as much as you stuff put down, yep, you know, they would eat it. So for some animals, it's not really an issue. But I guess I also wonder how people decide, what a serving is and how much food they should give at one time.
And that varies based on the amount of kilocalories per cup and the ideal body weight of the pet. That's certainly something that we calculate out, especially for animals that are having weight issues. But there are guidelines on the bag for most products. And that's, just keep in mind that is a starting point. So you look at those guidelines and that it'll say for cats this age and this body weight, and we're feeding for ideal body weight. So if you have a 20-pound cat, that should be 12 pounds. You don't want to feed for a 20-pound cat, because that's to maintain that 20 pounds of body weight. And certainly, unless you have a gigantic cat, that's probably not a healthy weight for most. So you're looking at feeding for a healthy body weight. You go by those recommendations, and then you have to adjust for your cat. And there's a body condition score system that's available. Veterinarians can provide it for you. And there's a couple different, there's a 1 to 9 scale. It's on the Purina website. And it's basically looking at your cat's body condition score or your dog's body condition score and determining if their ribs, if you can feel their ribs, how well can you feel their ribs? Can you see an abdominal tuck? And then adjusting that baseline recommendation either up or down based on their body condition score.
So how many people do you think really are going to be good at looking at their animal and deciding whether or not, in fact, that the animal is heavier than it
Very
should be?
Few. And when you actually give them the body condition score sheet, because I have a rip-off one that you can just tear a sheet off and have the owners say, we'll say, Mr. Smith, would you like to score your pet's body condition? Where do you think they're at? Mm-hmm. And most people will score them incorrectly. There's some education there with the veterinarian and working with the clients and getting clients to realize that weight management is a true issue with pets. It's certainly an issue with birds as well. Dr. Welly can speak more about that. But we certainly do have some issues with appropriate feeding of all animals, whether it's an exotic animal or whether it's your cat or your dog. feeding an appropriate diet and an appropriate amount is very important, and they certainly do suffer from the same disease processes that humans do. And Dr. Welly may want to speak a little bit about birds and their diet and other exotic pets. It's a huge issue for them.
Yeah, sure. I think maybe I might be able to look at a dog or cat and get some clue as to whether that animal was overweight. I wouldn't have no idea looking at a cockatiel or a parrot or something like that and saying, well, is this bird heavier than it should be?
Yeah, it is actually a very common problem that we encounter. And part of the issue is because of the way their feathers lie, you really almost can't look at them and tell what their weight is. You kind of have to feel what their body condition is and almost spread out the feathers or wet them down to see the fat underneath their skin to be able to make that determination. With our birds, you know, there are some that are essentially domesticated, like our parakeets and cockatiels. But a lot of these birds are one or two generations from wild birds. And you know, in their process of evolving, they needed lots of calories. So they really prefer these really high-calorie types of foods, and they will eat that to the exclusion of other items. And what that runs into is not only do they take on extra calories and get overweight, but they also become deficient in important nutrients like vitamin A or calcium or other vital nutrients. Unlike with cats and dogs, where essentially if you buy a cat or a dog food, you know that they're reasonably balanced with respect to their major nutrients. A lot of the diets that are for sale for birds are simply seed mixtures, which are, you know, really not complete and balanced diets in any way. And so you combine that with the bird selecting preferentially for the higher calorie ones, and we end up with a really substantial number of nutritional problems in these birds.
We have a caller here. Let me just very quickly introduce again our guests. That was Dr. Kenneth Welly, you just heard. Also here in studio with me is Candace Norell. They're both on the faculty of the Veterinary Teaching Hospital, U of I College of Vet Medicine. Dr. Norell is a primary care vet, and Dr. Welly is an exotic animal vet, and he's particularly a specialist when it comes to birds. He's an avian guy. So any and all questions that have to do with companion animals, you give us a call, and they'll see if they can help you out. 333-945-5555 and toll-free 800-222-9455. Here's a caller in Charleston. Hello. Line one.
Hi.
Hello. Yeah.
Is that me?
Yes.
I have two questions. I have a dog, but actually the questions probably apply to either cat or dog. I was just shopping for flea prevention treatment and see that there's a huge range of price on these products. Question number one is, what's the difference? And are the lower-priced things that claim to keep your pet free of fleas for 1 month, are they as effective as the high-priced products? And I suppose that would apply to either cats or dogs. The other question is about birth control for dogs. And what is the current state of thinking about that? Years ago, I had a female dog that I thought I might want to have puppies with, but so the vet gave me birth control. It prevented her heat. This time around with a young female, the vet advised me really strongly against it, said they don't do it anymore, and I'm curious what the thinking is.
Okay. Well, let's start with the first question about the flea products. That certainly is a huge issue. There are many, many products. It's very confusing to most consumers about what they should or shouldn't use. And there's been a recent increase in the requirements for packaging on those products. So I would say you have to be very careful in selecting a flea and tick product. They are not equal. Many of the products take care of adults only. Many of the products will take care of adults and larvae. Few of them take care of, so it's a stage of the flea. Then you're looking at which stage does it take care of? How safe is it for my pet? And how safe is it for me or children or other animals who may be exposed to the product? So cats say for, if you have a cat and a dog and you apply a product to the dog that contains a permethrin, and that's a type of insecticide, cats are extremely sensitive to permethrins, and it can be toxic. So even if the cat, you didn't apply it directly to the cat, if the cat and dog are close or they sleep on the same bedding or the cat grooms the dog and ingests some of that product, it doesn't take much. They really can't metabolize it or get rid of it out of their system. And so they can have toxic effects. And the most common thing we'll see in those cats is full body, like muscle fasciculations or tremors, seizures. And it can take a couple days in the hospital with fluids and anticonvulsant or medications to help control those. So all flea products are not created equally. And the difference is probably the ingredients that they contain, whether they're systemic or get into the bloodstream or whether they simply lie in the lipid layer. And then the toxicity is certainly a huge issue, and the safety for a specific pet, whether it be a dog or a cat. Even a dog product, if you purchase the wrong size product, you could run into some problems. I would strongly recommend consulting with a veterinarian before using an over-the-counter product to ensure that it's safe and that they haven't seen an increased number of effects, especially even when applied appropriately, there are some products that can cause some side effects. And so there are a lot of products out there that work well, but I would be very cautious about what you're using, and I would recommend my recommendation would be one of the safer products that does not get systemic. A product like Frontline Plus, Advantage, those products mostly lie in the lipid layer or the fat layer of the skin and don't get into the bloodstream of the animal and therefore are a little bit safer, especially if you have a mixture of pets in the home. As far as exotic pets...
and the high-priced ones, yeah.
Yeah, but you're getting... you're getting a little bit better coverage. Most of those products that you get from your veterinarian are taking care of adults, larvae, eggs... so they're more broad spectrum. As far as exotic animals, flea protection is very specific, especially if you're going to apply a product. If you have guinea pigs or other caged animals in the home, they certainly do need flea control, but it's very, very important that you not purchase something over the counter because it could certainly become a major issue. And Dr. Welly may want to address that a little bit. A lot of people they forget about those caged animals and the possibility that they can get fleas.
Well, that can be a problem in a household where there's a big flea issue. part of it depends a little bit on where these animals are placed. So fleas don't generally jump more than about 18 inches high. And so if you have an animal up on a table where your cats and dogs cannot go, then generally they won't really get these fleas. But some of the products that are used for dogs and cats are safe to use in the exotic pets. Some of them are not. And so, again, you would really need to consult with a veterinarian who's knowledgeable in exotics to be able to figure out which ones are safe and which ones are not.
So did you have any other questions or concerns about the flea products? Is there anything else we may be able to help you with?
Well, that answers that. Thank you. Now about the birth control.
Yes, and so the thinking right now obviously is that spaying or neutering your pet is by far the way to go. And that's not just to prevent overpopulation, but it also decreases the risk that your pet will develop some complications, even in some cases an increased risk of cancer, infected uterus in females, testicular problems in males. We do have a huge problem with pet overpopulation. There's just not enough homes for all of the animals that are out there. And while it's a lot of people are like, oh, I'd really love to have a litter of puppies, you have to consider how many of them are out there and waiting for homes and shelters or even on the streets as strays. There are breeders who responsibly breed. But as far as birth control, currently our recommendation is still routine spaying and neutering, trying to hit them before their first heat cycle. There are some new procedures now. At the university, we're doing a laparoscopic-assisted spay where we actually just make two small incisions. We go in with a scope and we take out just the ovaries. So it's an ovariectomy and not the entire uterus. And that has been shown to be very effective and also safe. And it decreases the risk of hemorrhage and there's no increased risks without the ovaries and the hormones associated with that. We don't have an increased risk of infection and we certainly don't see an increased risk of cancers if we're taking out the ovaries only. So we have progressed in our surgical capabilities and our recommendations. Most of my clients, I do recommend a laparoscopic spay for the larger dogs. The smaller dogs, we're still going in and doing routine spays. And as far as the male cats, routine castration and as well as dogs is generally recommended. There are some complications associated with, used to be called mismating shots, and it's a hormone injection, and we have, there's an increased risk that they'll develop a pyometra, which is an infected uterus, following one of those injections. So if you don't want to have puppies, your best bet is to just go ahead and have the animal spayed or neutered.
Right, but he implied that there was health risk in using birth control. Is that your thinking?
I'm not sure what the veterinarian, the product they were using. And so as far, there's not a widespread use of birth control pills per se in cats and dogs. And we certainly can see side effects even in humans. And so extrapolating those, we certainly would expect to see some problems associated with dogs and cats. I do not prescribe birth control for dogs and cats, so I'm not familiar with what the product he may be using. If it's a mismating shot for after a mate, yes, definitely there are some major complications associated with using that product. And it's not currently a recommended procedure to put an animal on birth control. We'd much rather see the patient be spayed or neutered.
Right. Okay, and just one little follow-up about neutering a male dog. What age do you recommend?
We usually have that, you know, it's really variable depending on the situation of the pet, but generally by 6 months of age. So somewhere between that 4 and 6 month mark after they've completed their routine series of vaccinations, they certainly can be done safely at an earlier age, and they can be done on older animals as well. But if you're talking about a puppy, between the ages of 4 and 6 months, we certainly have animals at the shelters who are routinely being neutered at 8 weeks of age.
Is there any behavioral difference in a male that grows up having been neutered young?
Well, you certainly...
aside from the sex drive, of course.
We certainly can't... Obviously, they have a decreased desire to bolt out the door and chase after females in the neighborhood that are in heat. And we do see some decreased marking behaviors or urinating inappropriately in dogs that are neutered. And we can also see in dogs that have a tendency to be aggressive, removal of the testicles can decrease their desire to bite and in some cases aid in combination with behavior modification in controlling aggression.
Yeah, but for a normal dog who you would want to be alert and not aggressive but on guard, and, you know, would that change?
You can certainly have a guard dog who is neutered. It's all about training, and neutering certainly doesn't have negative consequences. It's not going to make them lazy. It does decrease their metabolism, but neutering in and of itself doesn't make a fat or a lazy dog. Neutering decreases metabolism. If you overfeed them, then after that, they will become a little bit overweight. But the benefits from neutering far outweigh the risks, and you can still have a dog that will protect you and your family that's neutered.
Yeah. Well, I hope that helps out the caller. We have several others, and I want to get on to them, and also maybe I should take the opportunity here to introduce once again the guests in this hour of Focus, Drs. Candace Norell and Kenneth Welly. They're both on the faculty of the Veterinary Teaching Hospital and the U of I College of Vet Medicine here at U of I Urbana-Champaign. Dr. Norell is a primary care vet, and Dr. Welly is an exotic animal vet with special interest in birds. So if you have questions about variety of animals, give us a call and they'll see if they can help you out. 333-9455. Toll free 800-222-9455. You can also send us an email, will-talk@illinois.edu. And let's go on here. We'll talk with someone in DeWitt County on toll free line four. Hello.
Yeah, good morning.
Yes.
We used to have a happy house, but with living with our two cats, but my son had to send his two cats to live with us, and we're ma- maintaining the peace with a demilitarized zone made of child gates, two of them, so they can't reach through and claw each other. Is there any hope to peace in the world?
Absolutely. It can be stressful when you add cats to the house, especially cats that haven't been, that are not used to living with other cats. It sounds like you have a group of two cats who joined another group of two cats. And so certainly there can be some issues in introducing the new cats. There are some products. There's something called Feliway, and it is a hormone. It's basically a plug-in, and it's the pheromones that they secrete naturally, and that's what they secrete when they're rubbing against you with their head. It's a diffuser that you can put in the room, and it's shown to help calm cats. And again, that product is called Feliway. It's available by from your veterinarian. There are similar products available over the counter. The difference is the concentration of pheromone in the product. That will help, but it's certainly not going to be a fix-all. You're going to have to work with some behavior modification techniques. We've proven over and over that negative reinforcement does not work in pets. We're looking more at positive reinforcement. And you may have to do a gradual introduction where they have supervised time together. And when they are not getting along well, separate them back out. Reward them for the appropriate behavior. And you could also try introducing some things that cats cannot associate with negative feelings, like catnip, and giving the cats catnip when they're out together. It can help calm, and they have a hard time associating negative thoughts when they have catnip to smell or eat. Also, providing an environment that will enrich their lives with a lot of areas for hiding, so that those cats that are less social have spaces to get away, whether it be cubby holes, the cat towers. Cats love to be up high, but just environmental enrichment, positive reinforcement, and patience, I guess, is probably most important. You can certainly see an environment where a specific cat is not able to live with other cats, or they are a danger to other cats. And in those specific situations, your veterinarian, I think people tend to not think about us as someone who can help with behavior issues. And this is why so many cats end up in the shelter. On average, we lose about 15% of our clientele every year because they take the cat to the shelter and they never consulted the veterinarian about options or even medications. We certainly have some medications for extremely aggressive cats, antisocial cats. So before you give up, I would certainly recommend that you speak with your veterinarian more about exactly what's going on about those individual cats and each one of their behaviors, so that they can maybe work with you on some ideas if there's one particular cat that's antisocial or aggressive, and give you some ideas and methods of coping with that rather than giving up. We hate to see you give up and have a cat end up in the shelter because of a behavioral issue, and that's why the vast majority of them are in there.
Okay. We'll try those suggestions. One other question. One cat of ours is old, has weak kidneys, and goes into the vet now and then to get, whatever it is they do, vitamins and adding, pumping them up with fluids. But he has trouble with eating. If we put food in front of him, he acts like it's radioactive. But if we take some on the tip of the finger, he'll eat it, and then he'll start eating the rest. I don't know if he's half blind or just weird or what.
No, I mean, I think you're saying that you have a cat with a major metabolic disease process. There could be some dental disease also associated with that. Oral pain certainly could make a cat not want to eat. Nausea associated with the kidney disease, they can get ulcers, and they may have an appetite and they'll look at it, but then they feel sick to their stomach because they're ulcerated. So there are a lot of possibilities there. Certainly vision could be one of them. If the cat is going to the bowl but then kind of refusing, it sounds like maybe he's hungry, but possibly nauseated or maybe having some oral pain, I think a good examination by your veterinarian to evaluate the oral cavity as well as the potential for ulcers or any other complications associated with the renal disease is probably what needs to happen here.
Okay, thank you very much.
All right, very good. Thank you. Let's go on. In fact, we have several people holding, and when next somebody is calling on a cell phone, I believe, on line two. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes, hi.
A couple quick questions about a 12-week-old puppy. How much, what would be the maximum amount of food she should be getting a day? The bag, the Purina bag that we have suggests between 2 and 5 cups a day, and we think 5 is too much and 2 is not enough. So what's, is 3 cups too much?
Yeah, and that's and like I said, it's really hard to sometimes look at those requirements, and it probably gives you a range of ages, so or pounds. It'll say dogs weighing puppies from 1 to 3 weeks of age weighing 5 to 15 pounds should get X amount of cups to X amount of cups. So you have to look at that. The dogs in the upper range of the weight. So the dogs that are 15 pounds are going to get that higher amount of food. The dogs that are 5 pounds are going to get the lesser amount of food. And then you're going to kind of gradually in the middle figure out an amount that's good for them. And again, it's not everybody's metabolism is different. And that goes for dogs and cats too. So it's a starting point. So we have to look at body condition scores. Does the dog appear to you to be healthy? Like if you make a fist and rub your hand over your knuckles, if you can feel the ribs that way, that's too skinny. If you flip your hand over with your palm open and rub your hand across where your knuckles would be on the backside and you have to push through fat to feel the ribs, that's too heavy. If you flip your hand over and your palm is open and you rub across your knuckles and you can feel the ribs with gentle pressure, that's about right. You also want to maintain a nice abdominal tuck. Puppies are difficult, but again, consulting with your veterinarian about the food that you're feeding, the number of kilocalories per cup, and your pet's body condition score is probably going to be the best help that you can get.
Okay, and when can we go from 3 times a day to 2 times a day?
That's really specific. The smaller breed puppies, the very tiny puppies have trouble, like little Chihuahuas, Yorkies, have trouble. Golden Retrievers, you're probably going to be fine at 12 weeks of age, but the smaller puppies have trouble maintaining their sugar levels when they're not fed regularly. The larger breed puppies can usually go to 2 times a day without much of a problem.
All right, and then what about being out of the – one of us goes home for lunch to let her out. When can we stop doing that, let her go a full 8 hours between letting her out? Is it 6 months or?
Well, it's not. That's also more specific to the size of the dog and the size of the bladder and how long they're going to be able to hold it. So she's 12 weeks old, 3 months. So 3 plus, we usually say the number of months plus an hour. So maybe 4 hours right now. But that's really variable. Many puppies will train early and they'll not want to urinate in their crate and they'll hold it. Many puppies, you'll have a lot of problems training them and they'll need to go out more frequently. So it's going to be trial and error to see how long, and increasing it by an hour or so here and there is going to help you determine whether or not the puppy is able. How are we doing overnight? Are you getting up overnight?
Yes. Well, just once. Usually she goes to bed about 10 and then wakes up around 5-ish to go out.
So she's going 7 hours right now. So
right.
You're probably reaching a point where you may not have to come home for lunch. Although if it's possible, it's always nice to get them out of their crate to reinforce crate training and make sure they have an opportunity to get outside, especially when they're young, so that you don't break that cycle of training.
Okay. And could you briefly say what the symptoms are of a urinary tract infection?
Once again, it's variable depending on what's going on with the pet. We can certainly have quiet urinary tract infections, but if you're going to see clinical signs, what we're going to see is an increase in the frequency of urination, but only small amounts. So they're squatting to urinate, and they may dribble a little bit. There could be some blood in the urine, increased licking of the vulvar region if it's a female. Those are some of the things that you may see. We can see animals come in that the owners did not realize they had a urinary tract infection. But if you're seeing clinical signs, it would usually be they have to urinate more and in smaller amounts.
Okay. appreciate it. Thank you.
Very good. We have some other callers here. Again, we have about 10 minutes left in this hour of Focus. We're taking questions about care of companion animals. Our guests are two veterinarians from the U of I College of Vet Medicine, Drs. Candace Norell and Kenneth Welly. And if you had questions, give us a call, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Email will-talk@illinois.edu, and we'll try to get in as many as we can. And again, another caller here. This is somebody in Champaign, line one. Hello.
Hi. I had a question, maybe for both, two separate questions. For the general vet, I have a cat, and he seems to get constipated, and he'll eat, and then he'll spit up shortly after he eats without having really, you know, nothing's been digested. And then shortly after that, he has to go use the litter pan and seems to strain. And I know from the litter pan that he'll go some time without producing anything. So I started to give him about a tablespoon of canned pumpkin twice a day with his heart and his kibble. And that seems to help, and I just wanted to know if that's a reasonable thing to do. And he just had his teeth cleaned, and he's 10, so he had blood work done, and he doesn't have any issues with, you know, thyroid or kidney, you know, nothing else that would seem to be related to this.
Okay. Certainly, I'm glad that he's had blood work and a urinalysis. Thyroid hormone evaluation,
yeah.
That's important. If the veterinarian has done a complete physical examination and they haven't found any abnormalities that may result in dehydration and then drier stools, that's certainly an option. You can consult with your veterinarian about other medications that can be used to bulk up the diet. Canned pumpkin, if he likes it, most cats do, and you're finding that it works for him and your veterinarian has assured you that there are no problems, and it's just a fiber issue, you could certainly do that. You know, it may be a motility issue too. He could be losing some motility in his colon, moving things along, dehydration issues. So making sure that there's no metabolic issues would be number one. And then from there, the pumpkin is certainly an option to increase the fiber in the diet, but we do want to make sure that we're not missing something that's causing those clinical signs. And if there's vomiting and constipation, there may be a need to do some more advanced diagnostics like an abdominal ultrasound just to make sure we don't see anything there.
Okay. When I started giving him the pumpkin, both the spitting up and the constipation did seem to stop. And then just recently I ran out of it, and he went about 24 or 36 hours without any. And then sure enough, toward the end of that, he did spit up again.
Okay.
I understand what you're saying.
It certainly sounds like it could be a fiber-related issue, but I would definitely consult with your veterinarian to ensure that we're not missing anything.
Okay.
If the pumpkin is working, it sounds most likely that it's going to be a fiber-related issue, but I certainly couldn't say definitively that there's not something else going on.
Okay. And as far as dental health, is there they only eat dry food, my cats, and is it bad, the pumpkin? Is that, you know, going to be a problem because it's sticky and wet and has sugar in it?
No, I would not use pumpkin pie filling.
I just use plain old, stewed pumpkin.
Okay, canned pumpkin, yes.
Okay.
No, I mean, a dollop of pumpkin in addition to their dry food is certainly it's not going to change their need for dental health care. They have teeth, so they need to have an annual dental evaluation.
Yep.
But I wouldn't worry. If the cat needs the additional fiber, then it needs the additional fiber.
Okay. And he's fussy about where he drinks. I've often worried that he doesn't get enough to drink because I have two bowls that I keep accessible and clean and filled, but he's just obsessed with drinking out of the kitchen faucet.
Yeah, cats like running water.
He'll sit up there and he'll try to catch the drip.
Yep, that's very common.
Okay.
They do make cat watering bowls that have a recirculating water, and it's dripping. Cats love those, and if you think he's not drinking enough, that might be an idea to increase his water consumption and maybe aid with his constipation as well.
Maybe I'll break down and get one of those. Then the other question I have is I've been interested in some point getting some birds, and this is where the bird specialist might come in. But since I have cats, I have this horror that there's going to be, it would be caged, obviously, but is the bird going to just be in terror because it's going to be aware that there are cats around, even if the cats can't get at it? I mean, is there anything to do to minimize any sort of, I don't want to have a poor bird that's living a nightmare because I have three extremely sweet but normally interested cats.
Well, that is a potential problem. I mean, imagine living in a cage with lions surrounding you.
Absolutely.
And so we got a similar thing. And certainly cats present a very real danger to most birds. Now, depending on the size of bird that you get, some of the parrots may actually frighten your cat more than the other way around.
Well, thinking of the little ones.
Yeah, the smaller ones, they're definitely going to be at more risk.
Yeah.
Now, one of the things that people will sometimes do is put them in a room where the cats don't go.
Mm-hmm.
Or some people will hang the cage from the ceiling where the cats can't really get too close to them.
Yeah.
But again, I would consider it a very distinct risk. And
yeah.
You do need to take precautions to make sure that the cats, one, don't have any real chance of actually getting to those birds.
Right.
And secondly, that the birds are not continually stressed by the presence of those predators.
Yeah, that's more my concern because I would do everything I could, to keep make the cats unable to actually get at the mm-hmm. bird. But I still, if the bird's aware the cats are there, and it would be keeping it in another room, would that be lonely or bad for the stressful for the bird in that he's isolated or?
Well, potentially. I mean, they are social animals.
Yeah.
Now, if you were to get a pair of birds,
yeah.
then, they obviously provide companionship for one another.
Yeah.
And that would reduce that issue. Although sometimes I would say that birds kept in a pair like that may have a little less interest in companionship with a person.
Person, yeah. Okay. Well, maybe it's just something to think about longer and maybe not do. Okay.
All right.
Very good. Thank
you.
Thanks for your help. Bye.
Okay. We'll do at least one more here. Urbana, line number three. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I have a 2.5-year-old miniature poodle, a male, and I have two concerns. He needs to be neutered. And is there a clinic of some kind? My kids got him for me a couple of years ago, and the high maintenance is really too expensive for me, but I just love him. So I'm trying to find maybe a clinic or something that does the neutering so it won't be so expensive.
Yeah, you could check with the Humane Society. I do believe that they periodically have a low-cost spay-neuter clinic. I'm not sure if it's associated with the Humane Society or with Animal Services, but you could check with them. I know that there is a low-cost spay-neuter potentially in the area, not all the time, but there's not one specific clinic that I would say, does low-cost spay-neuter or anything like that, but you could check with the Humane Society to see if there's any help for you there. And then also there are options like Care Credit that allows you to pay over time. It's like a credit card that you use for medical issues. The university has some funds for people who qualify and can prove need. We have a fund for that. We generally use it for more emergent needs. But I would try Care Credit. You can go online. It's www.carecredit.com, and you apply just like any other credit card, and that'll allow you a little bit of flexibility in your payments.
The other thing is he licks me all the time, and I can't seem to find anything to break the habit.
Okay.
He doesn't really do it to other people so much.
Okay. It's probably just a sign of affection, and if you don't want him to lick you, once again, negative reinforcement has been proven over and over and over to not work in dogs. So, flicking them, yelling at them, tapping them on the nose, that just generally does not work at all. You can put him away. isolate him when he's licking you. Like, put him down. Don't let him near you. Walk away. Give him a few minutes. Reward him when he's sitting with you and he's not licking you. So, and you have about a 3-second window in a dog's mind to get a reward to them that they associate with that behavior. But rewarding him for the things that he does good. If he's sitting on your lap and he's not licking at you, he gets a treat. If he's licking at you, his time sitting on your lap is done and he goes away. But positive reinforcement for his behavior that you enjoy and that you like and that you want to let him know that is appropriate is by far the best way to work around that, rather than negative reinforcement for the inappropriate behavior.
I don't use any negative reinforcement for him. It obviously doesn't work, and it also just seems to make him mad.
Yep, it can definitely increase aggression. So just put him off your lap and walk away, and he just doesn't exist for a little while. You can try it again, and each time that he does try to lick you in the face, put him off your lap, walk away, and he gets no attention whatsoever. He's looking for attention, and he doesn't care if it's positive or negative. So when he's with you and he's doing good things, rewards, when he's doing something you don't like, it's kind of like ignoring it. We certainly wouldn't do with a child, but with dogs it seems to work.
Yeah. He does it all the time, so I mean...
Some dogs just can't control their liquor.
An old vet joke there, isn't it?
Yeah. Another one do that. Okay.
All right. Well, thanks.
One more thing. Yeah. He's paper trained because I can't always take him out because of my health. So I'm trying to move the paper into another room, and he's just not buying it. Do you have any suggestion about that?
And they do develop a substrate preference. So if there is something under the paper that's making him, like if there's carpet or you have like a puppy pad and you're putting it on top of a substrate, he may have a...
No, it's wood floor, and then I use plastic trash bags under the paper.
Are you doing a gradual move, like gradually? I know it sounds awkward and it'd be difficult, but you can't just willy-nilly move the pad from one place to another. You kind of have to make a gradual transition, so it's moving through the house to the new location to kind of convince them, and then positive reinforcement when he does use it.
Right. Yeah, I tried that, but I didn't try the gradual thing. I just moved it to the other room and then reinforced him when he used that, but he just didn't use it much.
You might try the gradual, kind of moving it slowly to the location that you want it.
Okay, I hope that helps. I got to jump in here because we're going to have to stop. We want to say thanks very much to our guests, Dr. Candace Norell and Dr. Kenneth Welly, for being here. They're both vets from the Veterinary Teaching Hospital, U of I College of Vet Medicine. If you go online, go to their website of the College of Vet Medicine. There's a lot of answers to basic questions there. So maybe one thing, if people have questions, that's one thing they could try to do. And then, of course, they should talk to their own vet if they got issues with their animals. Hey, thank you both very much for being here.
Thanks for having me.